realized that the medicine that I actually really needed was my yoga practice. And since then, I have never had a panic attack.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kirsten Davidson, your host and creator of my wellness podcast, Mind the Gaps, surrendering our typical ways of looking at life to step out of our comfort zone and into our growth zone. Welcome to episode number 6, Life Lessons from Yoga, where we're joined by my friend, yoga instructor, and guest on the show, Annetta Petruski. Annetta has been a yoga teacher for over 10 years, spending 5 of those years in New York City running and growing a yoga studio. This provided her with both teaching experience and insights into the business of yoga. Inspired by this, she decided to establish her own studio here in Ontario. Through significant life challenges and changes, Annetta discovered a newfound resilience and grit within herself. She's embraced the belief that challenges happen for her, not to her. Annetta emphasizes the power and support found within community. Currently, Annetta is the owner of Power Yoga Canada Burlington and has been for over 4 years. She's also a Lululemon ambassador, co-founder and retreat leader of Soulful Yoga and Wellness, and she serves as a yoga teacher mentor while continuing her journey as a student. I first met Annetta when I walked through the doors of her yoga studio last summer, greeted with a massive smile and a sweaty hug. After my first few classes, I noticed that the underlying principles and lessons in yoga reflect those that I practice in my work as a psychotherapist. I believe that it's so important to extract these life lessons from yoga so that they can be accessible to every single one of us. Truly, no matter if you practice yoga or not. It's not just about the physical movement, it's a mindset. And as we'll learn today, just as this mindset helps guide us through yoga, it can help guide us through the journey of life itself. Because of all this, I quickly fell in love with the studio, the community, and of course, the practice, and it's now a huge part of my life. For those of you who've listened to my last episode on Blue Zone Living in Costa Rica, you'll know that I went on a yoga retreat earlier this year, one that I actually came across through Power Yoga Canada in Burlington. Since then, I've been eager to talk more about the mental, physical, and spiritual benefits of yoga, and so naturally, I interviewed a woman who truly practices what she preaches. For all things yoga and lifestyle, check out Annetta on Instagram at annettapie_. That's A-N-E-T-A-P-I-E _. And Burlington PYC. That's BURLINGTONPYC. You can also check out her retreat website, soulfulyogawellness.com. To stay up to date on all things Mind the Gaps, feel free to follow me on Instagram at kirsten.davidson. I'm happy to respond to any and all of your questions, comments, and feedback on the show. And if you're interested in booking a therapy session with me, you can also email me directly at kirsten@mindthegaps.co. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy. Hi, Annetta. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So I thought we could start off by you telling us a bit about your story and how you found yoga, or rather how yoga found you.
I love this question because the latter is exactly how I started yoga. So back in 2008, I experienced my first panic attack at a carnival, and I wasn't sure where it came from. It ended up reoccurring. It started to happen more often. And then these like little anxiety attacks were happening. And so I went to the doctor. I kid you not, I had multiple MRIs. I've had blood work done, like every possible test to see if something was wrong neurologically. And because they couldn't figure out what was going on. And then at the end of it, my doctor said, you know what, I think you have a minor anxiety disorder. And so with this, there's two approaches. One, we can put you on medication, or two, you start going to yoga classes. And I was like very resistant to the yoga class option, but I didn't want to. I'm the girl that doesn't even take an Advil. Like I didn't want to do that approach either. So
Right.
It just so happened, you know, we talk a lot about there's no such thing as coincidences. I had to get my car fixed and my dad owned a shop. And so he said, you know what, this is going to take a few hours and you are lucky because I got you a yoga class pass and there is a new studio right behind my shop.
Oh, I love that.
Great. This is awesome. So with my resistance, I headed up to the studio and I took my first hot power yoga class in sweatpants and a cotton t-shirt. And so I went in there and knew absolutely nothing. You know, the verbiage and everything was brand new. And so I got through it. It was one of the hardest things I've done, mm-hmm. I've ever done. And shortly after that, I joined a 40-day challenge because I came from like a sports background. So I really do love that competitive edge in me. And so I was like, hey, I really suck at this. So I'm going to suck for a long time until this thing actually sticks. And my doctor is going to be happy because I'm going to report back and say that I did it. Mm-hmm. And so probably within the next 2-3 practices, I didn't even notice that the anxiety literally stopped and I was sleeping well. Within a very short time, people started saying to me, oh, you like look different. The way I would handle conflict, you know, challenges in my day to day seemed to be coming with a lot more patience and ease. Obviously not, I was still batshit crazy, let's be honest. But it was less of that. And so I realized that the medicine that I actually really needed was my yoga practice. And since then, I have never had a panic attack. And I do not. They're gone.
Wow.
So I don't know. Is it just a coincidence or is it that powerful practice of, you know, getting on my mat, meeting myself where I'm at, getting into the breath work, the sweat, like everything. I don't know. I didn't realize how many things were going on in my head mm-hmm. and the rush and the doing things right and perfect and being perfect for everybody. That was very subconscious.
Yeah.
So in the yoga class, like my teacher would always say really great, powerful reminders of just meeting myself where I'm at, being patient with myself, and all of that just got absorbed into my body. And there we go. And the anxiety was gone.
Annetta's experience with anxiety is the perfect example to illustrate how the practice of yoga can positively influence our minds and our bodies. To Annetta's point, is it coincidence that her panic attacks completely stopped after starting yoga? Absolutely not. Countless research studies show that the practice of yoga supports our parasympathetic nervous system. And because of this, yoga can work as a proactive and a reactive method for reducing anxiety. Our parasympathetic nervous system is a network of nerves in our bodies that's responsible for relaxing and calming us after experiencing danger, stress, fear. Practicing what's known as body consciousness through yoga, that is, being aware of, in tune with, and accepting of our physical bodies and minds, this can help reduce the dysregulation in our nervous systems. So we can see that it's not just the physical movement of yoga that can reduce anxiety levels, it's the mindset that goes with it, nurturing self-awareness and self-acceptance. This reminded me of something I heard on Dr. Rankin Chatterjee's podcast called Feel Better, Live More. He and one of his guests discuss how high-intensity workouts like HIIT training can trigger what's called the sympathetic nervous system. Now, the sympathetic nervous system is the network of nerves responsible for activating your fight or flight response. That means to be alert and prepared for danger, essentially to be anxious and on edge. In my last episode, I mentioned how by slowing down, we can actually be more productive. Now, let's apply this to yoga. By slowing down through this practice, we might actually become more mentally and even physically fit.
From that point on, I was really interested in taking my yoga practice further. And so I did my teacher training a couple years later. Then my life took me to New York City. I started running a yoga studio there. I managed that, had no experience, but I think it was because of my yoga practice that allowed me to step into outside of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I worked in finance before in Excel spreadsheets and all. And then, you know, oh, can you manage people? No, like, no, I can't. I do new territory, but I'm going to try.
Yeah.
Along the way, my husband and I decided to separate. Mm-hmm. This was all happening in New York. We had to move back with my parents, literally starting from ground zero. And in all of that turbulence, my yoga practice was like my constant, and the panic attacks still were at bay, not happening. And you would have thought by now I would have been like really on the floor with anxiety, riddled with anxiety, but I kept my practice. That's one thing that I kept consistent, is just like getting on my mat and moving through those emotions. Later on, I had the opportunity to open up Power Yoga Canada Burlington with Kinley and Pauline. They are the co-founders of Power Yoga Canada.
Nice.
And so I really put my drishti on that. At that time, I moved out of my parents. I just really needed, you know, just that quiet time. And that's when my meditation practice really went full head. I had the room to just be quiet with my thoughts. And I feel like that space of quiet, of stillness, was another layer of being ready for entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm.
And then I opened the studio and felt like 5 minutes later, you know, the studio shut down because of the pandemic.
Oh my God.
Talk about timing. And again, like almost waiting for the ball to drop. My body is still responding in a way where I'm good. Like I got this. You hear like the one pose at a time. Off the mat, it was really like, today is the day for one day only. I know that I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the principles of yoga I could see now, it was just so threaded and embedded into my way of life
mm-hmm.
that I think have helped me stay resilient. And now being open and having a really thriving, amazing yoga studio with the most incredible people is something that I do not take for granted. But if it wasn't for that one pass that my dad got me,
wow,
that resistance, didn't want to do it. And it was actually what I needed the most. So
isn't that how it is, right? The things that we resist are the ones that can benefit us the most. And that's such an amazing story. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Aneta. That's pretty powerful to see how one decision and multiple, we could say, roadblocks ended up being building blocks for you. And here you are now, right? Like you said, thriving studio. I love Power Yoga Canada. Love
coming. It's so good having you for the community.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember my first class there. You were in it and you were attending a class. And it was someone who was just a student teaching, and I finished and I was like, whoa, I've done power yoga before, but this, I am sweating buckets. I could like wring out my clothes. But then I saw other people like that too. So I was like, either I'm super unfit or like everyone is sweating buckets, and everyone was sweating buckets, so it made me feel better.
And now you're there like 5 times a week.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I completely resonate with how you're saying the practices in yoga translate to lifestyle. And it is more than just a practice that exists within the studio because of the principles, right? And like you said, at first focusing on being perfect. And I think that's what a lot of people bring to the studio when you first come, at least for me. It's this fear of like, oh my God, I'm looking around at other people and oh, I can't do that yet. And, or I can't do that at all. And kind of negative self-talk. But then the more you get into it, you realize that the acceptance and pushing outside of your comfort zone does require vulnerability to fall sometimes in life and on the mat.
100%. They're not separate. They're very much intertwined.
In episode 2 of Mind the Gaps, I introduced what I call my time in range theory, empowering us to maximize our time in equilibrium. This means to be in balance, in allostasis, in growth, all in range, while also normalizing that it's impossible to be in range at all times. We're gonna get thrown off. Sometimes we'll be the ones to throw ourselves off. It's the balancing act in and of itself that gives meaning and purpose to our lives. And just as mindfulness can help us return to being in range, so too can yoga, since they're truly one and the same practice. To take a deeper dive into key life lessons from yoga, I asked Annetta about this term called the Eight Limbs of Yoga. Eight Limbs is said to have been coined in 2nd century BCE, and its principles are meant to act as a guideline for living a meaningful and purposeful life. The Eight Limbs are powerful tools that go beyond the yoga studio and the practice itself. They're standalone pieces of wisdom that we can all benefit from, no matter whether you're interested in practicing yoga or not. That's almost besides the point. Annetta graciously shared her knowledge on what these eight limbs are and how they can show up on the yoga mat and off the yoga mat.
Okay, so the eight limbs of yoga, for me, really lays out a roadmap of living a harmonious, balanced life. Mm-hmm. So the first two that I want to talk about is the yama and the niyama. So the yama focuses on ethical disciplines, which is kindness, patience, nonviolence. Mm-hmm. These also provide guidance not only for your yoga practice on the mat, but how we navigate in the world.
Right.
And so the niyama emphasizes on self-discipline and personal observances. So things like cleanliness and contentment. And these two remind us to approach our practice with integrity, compassion, and gratitude. And so we treat ourselves and others with respect. We want to listen to our bodies, cultivate a mindset of self-awareness. And then off the mat, this is really how we interact with the world. And the way that we interact with the world is promoting harmony and empathy with each other. Then we have the third one, which is the asana, which we hear the most of, and that's the physical practice. Mm-hmm. So like the physical postures. So on the mat, it helps with strength, flexibility. It helps with presence, body awareness. Off the mat, asana really helps us with being resilient, mm-hmm. right? When you're taking an asana practice and you're in that physicalness of something that's really challenging, you could literally translate that into, let's say you're having a challenging conversation with somebody in a relationship outside of your mat. You've been there before. Couple breaths, take your time, feel your feet, right? Just like you do in class.
I think the asana is really, really powerful because in class, I think of that all the time. Like, I think that's probably the one that's most at the forefront of, if I can do this outside of the mat, I can do this on the mat, or vice versa. Like, if I can do this on the mat, then like I can do that hard thing off the mat. And it's just like a reminder that we can do hard things.
We can definitely do hard things. And I love, you know, reminding my students, like, who you are on the mat is who you are off the mat. Mm-hmm. And so back to the yamas, where, you know, we practice nonviolence. Sometimes I make a joke in class. It's like, okay, you can be, you find that edge of being kind to yourself, taking rest when you need to, you know, saying hello to somebody in the studio. Really, I find people are very polite and that type of approach, but then they leave, they jump in their car and they're stuck on the highway. Someone cuts them off. They flip the bird, like all of these things. And it's like, great. And is there a different approach that you literally just practiced in the room?
Yeah.
And, you know, and then there I am. It's like, wherever you go, there you are. It's not separate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And making it more real, more authentic. Like you said, there's kindness in the room, and I definitely feel the kindness. And I think the best feeling is the authenticity. Like, end of the class, no one looks their cutest at that time. sweaty, just, you know, exhausted. And I think when we're all laying there, like, you can hear everyone's breath in Shavasana and that final rest pose. And then, you know, the lights come on and we can all see each other and we all, you know, saunter out and have chats, and everyone's just so, so genuine with each other, I find, especially at the end of a practice.
Totally. And I really think that this one also is what, remember when I shared, when I first started yoga, and people were like, something's different about you. And I think it's that asana practice that has really taken me to out of my comfort zone. Like, I didn't think I could balance on one leg. I didn't think I could do crow pose. Mm-hmm. And then challenging myself off the mat, and I've done it. And I probably would have never done that before, because I wasn't, when we're really connected to our body, and the capability of what we can do from that place, I feel like all of a sudden we do act differently. We do have a different approach on how we have conversations with people or how we treat our, you know, our rituals in the morning. Or what I'm trying to say is the limb of like the eight limbs, the asana one, like you said, I agree, is the one that really spoke to me in how I treated people as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I accessed it. I accessed kindness in my body through a posture. I know what that feels like. And then it no longer landed in a concept for me. It was like, okay, now I can bring that forward without even thinking about it. It's just the feedback that I've received from others. And mm-hmm. a lot of my students say the same thing. People think I'm kinder, and like, you know, what used to piss me off no longer has a grip on me anymore.
Interesting. Yeah. The compassion that you show towards yourself then impacts the compassion we show towards other people, and the ability to actually believe in them, right? Like, I think so many yoga instructors, whether they mean it or not, and we know that you mean it, we know that you mean it, say, you know, you can do this, or push yourself, or like, what's holding you back today? Like these sayings that are kind, but just gentle reminders to say, you can do that thing that you're telling yourself you can't. And even if it's not today, it's a yet, right? Like you will be able to. And knowing that you truly believe it, right? Because of your story, because of your integration with yoga, it's not just a business for you. Like you truly believe what you're preaching. And that's how I look at myself as well as a therapist. And I think that's what makes all the difference with clients and with community, is that authenticity and empowerment that's real.
Totally. And that when you teach from that place, I recently did a poll asking people, what keeps bringing you back to what do you love so much about your yoga teacher, the practice? And it was like, when they're vulnerable, when they're real, when mm-hmm. I can connect to something that's not coming from a, you know, they're perfect and I'm not, or a performance place.
Yeah.
When they can speak from that and give me permission to find that in my own self, that's what keeps people coming back. It's the relatability.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes me think of when you've said before, like, try this. It's okay if it's messy. Yes. I love that. It is okay if it's messy.
Most things are.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Most things that are worth it start off very messy.
Yes.
Right? So then moving on, there are the next three limbs are pranayama, pratyahara, and dharana. And these focus on breath control, sensory withdrawal, and concentration, respectfully. So in class, you'll hear me a lot talk about drishti, you know, focus on that one specific spot on your mat or in front of the room. And these really, this tool really helps, and the breath work really help with connecting to back to our body, back to the physicalness, getting out of our head. When you focus on the details, like that's actually where transformation is born. That's where it's found. Mm-hmm. If you're constantly looking everywhere, if you're constantly, you know, oh, look at her, look at him, oh, they're faster, I should be here. Like you start to get into this script that gets you out of being grounded, mm-hmm. feeling your feet again. And I talk about feet a lot because you find your feet, you find your life. Teachers have said that to me and I'm like,
yeah.
Concept, it's real.
When you find your feet, you find your life. I loved how Annetta shared this quote because of all the fascinating science behind what it means to be grounded. I hope this finding blows your mind as much as it did mine. The Earth's natural electrical charge has been shown to activate our parasympathetic nervous system. As a reminder, an activated parasympathetic nervous system looks like being in range. This means being in equilibrium, balanced, calm, and secure. To reduce dysregulation in the body is also to reduce it in the mind. So when we're physically grounded in nature, whether we've got our feet in the sand or we're hugging a tree, we're literally, not figuratively, literally absorbing energy from the earth that helps put our body and mind at ease. Talk about planting deep roots. As holistic psychologist and author Dr. Nicole LaPara says, quote, "This isn't woo-woo thinking, it's science." In her most recent book, How to Be the Love You Seek, she uses scientific evidence to support how being in contact with the Earth's natural electrical charge can also improve heart rate variability, reduce inflammation, improve sleep, increase energy, ease pain, reduce stress, and normalize the body's biological rhythms.
So in that, the going inward action, the breath, all of that is a tremendous way of bringing yourself back to body awareness and presence.
So what you just mentioned about drishti reminds me of what you said at the start, which is you put your drishti on your practice, like on opening your business. So for people who didn't know what that means, now they know what that means. Drishti, I also mentioned in my very first episode, which is that fixed gaze, right? Like having that fixed gaze, having that focal point, which is literally in a yoga class to pick a point, right, and stare at it while you're in a pose so that, like you said, you're not falling all over the place. And then in life, yeah, to pick some focal points and maybe do a little less comparing and be able to, as you said, find your feet and focus on your feet and your gaze and, yeah, looking to others for empowerment, but not so that you fall.
Exactly. And if you fall, it's okay. You get back up and then focus again.
Exactly.
That's also the dance.
Yes.
That's also the willingness. Like, it's not going to always, you know, it's not going to be perfect. It never is. It's always going to be practice. And I want to also add to drishti. So when I suggest students to find a focal point, sometimes I'll see literally like, you know, the staring competition that you do with people to not blink.
Yeah.
Like there's that. Yes. You're looking at one spot, but that's not the focal point that we're looking to practice. It's not just staring. It's like when you're driving, and you're just staring straight. Of course, you're looking where you're driving, but your head's everywhere, right? You get home, you're like, how the hell did I get here?
Yeah, you're just on autopilot.
So everywhere, but yet your eyes are forward. So it's like finding that focal point and then really paying attention to it. And sometimes I'll even say, look at the speckle on your mat, like getting really into the nitty gritty of what you're looking at, what you want.
Yeah.
You want to see, because you could see 100 different things, but what is the thing that's going to light you up?
Right. And that's just so akin to mindfulness and meditation, right? Like I read somewhere that meditation and yoga are not separate, because you, when you're in a yoga practice, as you're saying, and you're looking at that speck on the ground, your mind could be elsewhere, even though your eyes are on the speck. And I think everyone has experienced that, right? So then the practice of meditation comes back to say, okay, it's okay that our mind drifted for a second and we can just bring it back to that speck or the light on the ceiling. I have become very familiar with this one light in the room. That's my usual focal point unless my mouth is around. But yeah, it's so different. It's just about looking at the world with fresh eyes, as if you've like never seen that speck before or never seen that light before. Otherwise, you're going to look at it, it's not going to mean anything, and then you're back in your head.
Exactly. Yep, you said it. You nailed it. Finally, dhyana and samadhi are the last two limbs, and these lead us to a state of meditation and spiritual awakening. So when you get to that point where, you know, you feel a sense of calm, a sense of less of that reaction place, more of that stillness place, those are the last two.
And with spiritual awakening, would you mind just explaining to listeners what that term means for you? Because I feel like there's a lot of confusion around the, you know, subjective nature of that term, spirituality.
Yeah, that is definitely a very big term.
Exactly.
It resides differently for everybody. I think for me, my spiritual awakening throughout the practice of yoga has really been, I don't have to be perfect. And I think that was like a whew. And in that space, doing, you know, the physical practice, the meditation, how I speak to myself, how I speak to others, what I'm focusing on, all of these things in the theme of dropping perfection and celebrating being imperfect mm-hmm. has allowed me so much grace and like harmony within myself. I don't know if I could say that I am spiritually awakened yet. I don't even know if I'll ever get there, but you know what I am? I am for it. Like mm-hmm. I'm for putting in the work.
Yeah.
Continuously get to that enlightenment.
I love that. I like how you said it's not like it's a destination. Like I have not reached the peak of spiritual enlightenment or like spirit being spiritually awakened. So as far as being at that final point that doesn't really exist goes, I was at a talk with physician Gabor Mate, and he was being interviewed on one of his most recent books. And someone in the audience during Q&A asked him, "Are you healed?" And he just laughed and he said, "No, you know, there is no final healed point. However, I have healed myself from wounds that were open. And it doesn't mean that they're all closed, but I no longer struggle with certain things that I used to." And I think that's probably the best way to describe it, right?
Totally relate. That's exactly, yeah. In a nutshell, that's how I feel 100%. Mm-hmm. And then there's this misconception. A lot of people are like, you know, "Oh, you're a yogi. You must be this," that like, there's all these labels that people have me at.
Oh, 100%.
No, absolutely not. And, "Oh, you must live this like Zen life." No, I could be a hot mess. You know, like I'm human. And this whole thing about students putting their teacher on a pedestal, I hear this a lot. Like, "Oh my God, you know, you have it all figured out." No, I don't. Mm-hmm. I don't have it figured out. Me teaching the room, I'm just being a vessel here. And I'm also, if anything, I'm learning the most from my students.
Yeah.
And that to me is also part of my path to spiritual awakening.
I love that. And exactly what you just said there, I completely resonate in my job as well, that the clients are the experts of their own lives. I am there to help them help themselves. And I am not some, you know, all-knowing being. And it's very easy for sure to put people we look up to on a pedestal or people who are helping us in that position, but it's so humbling. And I think the best moments with clients, and I'm sure for you with students, are, as they've said, those vulnerable moments where you see that we are human.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm you. I'm a reflection of you.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing this thing called life as well.
Last summer, I was gifted one of my now favorite books on life lessons from yoga. And this book is called Perfectly Imperfect, written by yoga pioneer Baron Baptiste. I asked Annetta what her thoughts were on the following excerpt from Baron's book. "In the gap between inhalation and exhalation, the place of no breath, you will find the secret of life. If you want to know life, you will find it in the place of breathlessness." Now, what I didn't know until our recording date is that Annetta completed her level 1 and level 2 Baptiste yoga training with Baron Baptiste himself. So not only does her insight on his teaching come from personal interpretation, they also come straight from the source. I'll quote Baron's words again. "In the gap between inhalation and exhalation, the place of no breath, you will find the secret of life. If you want to know life, you will find it in the place of breathlessness."
The best way that I could describe it is think of it as in our everyday rush. We're so caught up in doing the things, achieving the things, and worrying that we forget to just be. And so in that moment of stillness between the breaths, we are reminded of our own existence. We are reminded of our presence. Mm-hmm. And in that pure presence, we are not thinking at all about our past, our future. We're just really experiencing life as it is. Life is always going to be chaotic mm-hmm. for all of us. And yet there's still moments of stillness to be discovered. And I love that. Because I say to myself, even if my day is crazy, I think I don't have all this time, there are those pockets of finding that moment between the inhale and the exhale. When you experience this gap, you are really living in the most present moment of time. You're not worried about the future. You're not thinking about the past. You're really in it as life is being experienced right now. Anybody can do it. You do not have to be on this spiritual awakening journey. It's a tool that you can have every second of the day. You just take a deep breath in and a deep breath out. And a lot of time, maybe practice feeling that pause, what that pause is doing inside of your body. Is it giving you that moment of clarity, calmness, whatever it may be? It may not give anything, but it's really a great interrupter to, if you are somebody that's constantly on the move and doing five things at once, 24 tabs open. Hi. That's what's so great about embedding a yoga practice into your daily life as well, because we speak to that all the time.
I like how you call it an interrupter. The gap is an interrupter, because that's what we're doing here too, right? Like, minding gaps is interrupting our usual thought patterns, our usual feelings, our usual ideas about how our lives are supposed to go or how the world is supposed to go. And it's pretty amazing that, as you're saying, you can do this at any time. Like, we all have access to breath. And while Baron uses it literally in saying the gap between breath on your yoga mat, being able to just take pause in life in general, whether you do yoga or not, is such a gift.
Yeah. And the gift of like clarity, right? Like, just being clear. It seems difficult to get when you are operating in chaos.
Yeah.
How does clarity have a way in? And the way in is actually the gap.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we mind them. I love that. And it's so true that all of those principles and lessons in yoga translate off the mat and keep us in a place of expansion and a place of challenging ourselves, because when you're challenging yourself in the room, like you said, who you are in the room is who you are outside of the room. And I think it's, for a lot of people, they look at, oh, well, it's the end of the practice, no matter whether it's yoga or anything, like meditation, being at the gym, hanging out with friends, like whatever version of you that you are in certain settings, people will turn switches of themselves on and off. But it's so much easier to be the same person through and through. And I know when I say that, people might be like, well, you have to be a little bit different when you're at work versus when you're with friends. Fair enough. But I've said to my clients, you know, the way that I speak to you, I don't like to look at myself as this like structured type of therapist or type of person. And so the way that I speak to you is with the same compassion and kindness and love that I would to other people in my life. And I think that comes through for you as well, Annetta, in your classes. Like, you can so see that it is so authentic, and that you are coming at it from a place of love and a place of, I want you guys to take all the stuff we're doing here and bring it home with you. Like, don't let it stop at the door.
Totally. And you know, when I first started teaching, it was definitely not like that. Like, I wanted to people please every student. Of course, my numbers were low, because if I don't know who I am, how the heck am I going to lead from that place?
Exactly.
Right. And so it took some really, some good feedback from teachers I admire, and the practice of showing up and continuously, being myself, which is scary. It was scary. You're exposed.
Oh yeah.
From that place is when I started noticing that my numbers were increasing and people wanted to be around me and listen and hear what I have to say. Cause it was no longer me being, a performer up there.
Yeah. Yeah. That reminds me of something you said in a class before. And what I've heard other instructors at the studio say is like, it's just yoga. Why is everyone so serious right now? So looking around and noticing that people maybe, whether they're in drishti or not, are just like kind of lost in their thoughts or maybe really focused on what they're doing. And you can feel the judgment in their face saying like, take a deep breath, everyone. It's just yoga. And I like applying that to life in general. Like, I know that maybe sounds kind of flippant to say like, it's just life. Well, that's all we have. But at the same time, I think it's really important to be able to apply humor and lightness to the hard things we go through, to the fun things we go through, so that not everything is so heavy. Like, it doesn't have to be so serious. Not everything is a competition. And ultimately, your growth zone is your own. Everyone's looks different.
I love that so much. That totally resonates with me. I do want to add too, there's this opportunity to be in that growth zone. A lot of times in the practice, let's say you are in a pose that you're very familiar with. And all of a sudden in that familiarity, what I witness and what I observe is we get mediocre. We get like complacent. We're like, mm-hmm. We're just going to wait for the next thing, or not really in my preference right now. I'm going to wait it out until the next pose is the thing that I really am going to put my effort on. Right. And that spills over into daily life too, where, you know, I said this the other day and it just landed with somebody about a relationship. You know, you choose your person every single day. And mm-hmm. if you come from that place, choosing that pose today and giving it everything you've got, you will choose your partner every day in that context. Because when we live in this like familiarity, great. And the practice of mastery, the practice of growth stops.
Mm-hmm.
Just sitting in it.
Yeah.
Familiar with it. Cool. And what else is there? What else?
Right.
What else can you give? What else can you offer up?
Mm-hmm. I love that concept of choosing your partner every day, because we do make those choices every day. But you're right. Like, we get complacent, or we get in this like plateau state where we feel like we've mastered something, or we feel like we've already chosen them. So what more do I have to do on that? Like, I've already done that. But everything is a process. Like, going back to the, are you healed? Everything is a process. There is no final choice. There is no final destination.
Totally. You know, it's like tree pose, for example, we're all working to the mastery of it. Yeah. You know, arms are up, foot is pressed. There is so much. And that's probably another podcast we could talk about.
Yes.
That can be awakened and created from the base up. Like, the work never stops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're down for growth. If you're not down for it, great. Meet that. But like, if you want more, there will be more waiting for you to be met.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the surprises that you experience in yourself, like when you surprise yourself at what you can do, or you see other people surprising themselves at things they can do, that energy is so contagious. And I feel like that's really priceless.
I love that. When someone gets into their crow pose for the first time, right? And you're like, oh my gosh, they're here. They did it. Inside of them said, I am ready. Today's the day.
Yeah, exactly.
Messy or not.
Well, thank you so, so much, Annetta, for taking the time to be here today. I really appreciate all your thoughtfulness.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Kirsten. It was so, so wonderful.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, it's always appreciated for you to follow Mind the Gaps on your podcast streaming platform and to share it with your friends and family. To stay up to date on the show, you can find me on Instagram at kirsten.davidson. Thanks for minding the gaps with me today. I'll see you next time on the journey out of our comfort zone and into our growth zone.